There are no other sections.
Dick, your thoughts, please. One thing you can do to make sure you're reaching the group is to be a keen observer of body language. If you're presenting your views and you notice others drumming their fingers, doodling, shifting excessively in their seats, or looking everywhere but at you, you know you're not having the positive impact you want. Oh, don't confuse this, by the way, with lack of expression on someone's face. That may be a person who strongly controls his or her emotions. You need to concentrate on what's wrong, and the twitchers are telling you that something is. Negotiations and meetings take up much of our time. To make them pay off for you, you should 1. Observe others' body language to see if you're getting through to them. 2. Use body language to show that you're listening. 3. Use questions to get information and to take control. 4. Always keep your emotions in check. 5. Be careful of the words why and you. They sound like attacks to many people. 6. Plan, prepare, execute, and evaluate to make meetings meet your needs. And 7. Always clarify and summarize at the end of a negotiation or meeting to be sure that what you heard is what the other party said, and vice versa. All the conversational skills are intertwined. For example, if you wanted to discuss growth or salary with your boss, what are you actually doing? 1. You're in a negotiation, whether you want to call it that or not. 2. You want to use your persuasive skills to get him or her to see your side of the issue. And 3. You want to motivate your boss to get you what you feel you deserve. So all in one, you're a negotiator, a salesperson, and a master motivator. Unfortunately, most people don't realize that and leave their conversational skills behind when they have that dreaded annual talk. One reason they do that is because they don't prepare for this event as they would for a more formal negotiation or meeting. And preparation and planning are the keys to getting your conversational act together. In the case we're about to hear, Bob, a middle manager, wants a formal performance evaluation each year, as he was originally promised by the personnel department when he was hired 3 years ago. Every year his salary has increased 5% without explanation or reason. He's not terribly happy about that because he's heard through the grapevine that others have received as much as a 10% increase. He doesn't know his boss particularly well. She's had the position for a little over a year. He knows only that she has an MBA, is on the company's fast track, and runs a tight ship within budget.
I've got to plant the thought that this is as important to her as it is to me. I have to appeal to her self-interest.
Yes, Bob, what can I do for you? I can only spare about 10 or 15 minutes.
I'll try to fit your time frame, Marge, but this talk is important to both of us, particularly with the new project staring us right in the face.
Is something wrong?
Spell it out clearly. No, nothing's wrong. I'm pleased with the company and with my work, but before I take on a new challenge, I need to understand my role and my future here.
I didn't think you needed constant stroking, Bob. Can't we do this some other time? There's no problem with your work.
Stay confident. Assert yourself. We can probably finish this some other time, but I've been waiting 3 years for the performance appraisal I was promised.
When did I ever promise you a performance appraisal?
You didn't, but that was a condition of employment. Personnel told me that would be the basis of my growth here. Don't attack. Don't be emotional. Respect her position, or you'll be in a war. Look, I'm as much at fault as anyone. When you were brought in as head of the department, I always tried to respect your time, and I never bothered you about the appraisal. But I don't know where I stand, and it's really starting to bother me.
Well, this is news to me. I didn't know you were promised a formal performance appraisal, and I'm surprised you didn't know where you stood. From time to time, I always tried to tell you you were doing a good job, and I'll be happy to reiterate that.
Don't take it personally. Most managers avoid performance appraisals whenever they can get away with it. I've let her off the hook for over a year, so don't blame her for being human.
Look, Bob, you're a good person, you do good work, and you're appreciated.
Thanks. But what can I be doing to improve my chances around here? My future's important to me, and so is money. I'm perfectly aware that some people have gotten larger raises than I got, and I'm interested in knowing how the various percentages are determined.
You're doing good work, but you're not doing anything special. The top range acknowledges something special, and frankly, I never thought you were particularly motivated by money.
That's what I get for not speaking up. I'll never make that mistake again.
Also, Bob, a lot of people around here have MBAs, and we tend to pay them more.
There's a piece of information I needed confirmed. That's another reason we need to have a more formal discussion on a regular basis, Marge. Number one, I'm enrolling to obtain an MBA. And number two, I brought 10 years of experience with me when I joined this organization. And I think that's worth quite a bit, too.
I had no idea you were going after a master's. I'm not sure I can do anything for you on the regular pay increase at this point, but I might be able to do a lot for you in covering the cost of the MBA program. But we'll have to discuss our alternatives some other time. I have to leave for a meeting now.
Don't let her off the hook, but make it easy for her to give the formal assessment I want. I know you're pressed for time, so let me do this. I'll write my own appraisal. I'll tell you in writing what I feel are my strengths and weaknesses, and then you can react to it instead of having to spend hours compiling it. I'll have it on your desk next Monday, and if it fits your schedule, I'd like to meet with you to review it the following Monday. Is one time more convenient for you than another?
Here are some questions for you to consider. Did Bob profile his audience of one? Did he try to appeal to Marge's self-interests? How? He did not respond to her cutting comment about his not doing anything special. Should he have? Bob didn't use a lot of questions in this conversation. Of course, it's obvious that his speaking partner had no problem giving feedback. But are there any areas where questions may have helped him get more information, either for this meeting or prior to the next one? One of the first things you do prior to a conversation with anyone or any group you don't know particularly well is to mentally profile that person or persons. It's a lot easier to motivate or persuade someone if you can tailor your conversation to suit that person's special interests. Even if the individual is a total stranger, or more correctly, especially if that person is a total stranger, you should go through this exercise to prepare you for your conversation. I'll run through this list for a business conversation, but you should have no trouble converting it to a social situation. As I list these items, think if Bob related to Marge as well as he should have. 1. What's the role of your conversational partner in the organization? How far does his or her influence extend? 2. What is his or her relationship to you? 3. Is he or she a forceful person or laid back? 4. Does he or she relate to a cheerful, dynamic approach or a more somber, relevant approach? 5. Are you on a technical level with this person? Do you need to limit the use of jargon? 6. What can you do for this person? And 7. What do you want to happen as a result of this conversation? About the only thing I saw that Bob did wrong in his conversation was to whine a bit in the beginning. He complained that he had been waiting for years for a performance appraisal, and Marge, who would seem to have a low tolerance for complaints or challenges, was ready to bite his head off for it. But he quickly caught himself and righted the conversation. Specifically, Bob appealed to her interests with his enrollment in an MBA program, which was obviously important to her. He also appealed to her interests by offering to create the performance appraisal himself and save her time. Early in the conversation, Marge could have construed Bob's reference to needing to understand his role before taking on new challenges as a threat, but his earnest tone of voice largely negated that. Bob probably did the right thing by letting Marge's somewhat nasty comment, "You haven't done anything special," go, particularly since there will be a follow-up meeting, and you'll have plenty of time to prepare a list of all the things he did that he considered special. because of Marge's low annoyance threshold, he was justified in letting it go. Finally, Bob might have asked a few questions, not necessarily to keep the conversation alive, but to get more information. He could have asked Marge what the company's MBA policy was intended to accomplish, or how it's been proven that such a policy benefits the company. Did Bob do a good job selling himself? By engaging in a conversation and holding his own, he opened his boss's eyes to his value. Bob understood that the key to motivating or persuading someone is to communicate to the other person's point of view. All the persuasion and motivational techniques in the world won't work if the other person won't listen to you. Not everybody responds to the same message the same way. For example, I know two families who live next door to each other and who seem exceptionally similar in many ways. One went to an auto dealership, purchased a car on the spot, and raved about the salesperson and the price they received. Based on their recommendation, the second family went to the same dealership, had the same salesperson, and were so turned off by the high-pressure tactics, they vowed never to walk into that dealership again. How could that happen? How could one person's satisfaction be the other's utter dissatisfaction? Different people react in different ways. That's the message you should get from this. Not every technique works the same way on everybody. Once again, take the time to profile or size up the other party, and you'll develop a terrific success record in getting others to do what you want. Another way of saying the same thing is that all the persuasion and motivation techniques in the world are worthless if the other person isn't listening to you. That means you have to create an environment for people to listen. Think how motivated you were when someone, a supervisor, spouse, friend, or colleague, communicated a message to you that he or she wasn't listening.
I never knew if my boss was paying attention to me. He'd tell me to talk, and then he'd keep on going over whatever was on his desk in front of him. It made me feel as if what I did wasn't very important to him or the company.
I had a supervisor who never let me finish a sentence. The jerk interrupted everything, and he wasn't even nice about it. I tuned him out and did whatever I wanted.
I took a lot of time explaining to my neighbor how to use my brand new power saw that he wanted to borrow. Right in the middle of it, he started talking about the softball game he was playing tomorrow. Wait till he asked me for help again.
If, for example, you want to motivate an employee to do a better job, don't do it with harsh criticism. According to most experts, you'll find it far better to praise people for behaving as you want them to than to punish them for behaving in a way you consider inappropriate. That works equally well for friends, employees, children, just about anyone you can think of.